We back. Welcome to another episode of the Courtcast. As you can tell by the voice, it's me, your voice of reason, voice of truth, the man who speaks the truth, only the truth, and nothing but the truth. It's Feyi, back again with another episode of the Courtcast. And with me, of course, is the squad. You already know who it is. The man, the myth, the legend himself. The man who Joe Burrow stole his nickname from, T-Shy-T. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And I don't know what to call him. You know what? Our resident Skip Bayless. Welcome back to the show, Femi. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And I guess the floor is going to be yours in the first few minutes because we're starting with the Mavericks and the Warriors. Warriors, like we said in the last episode, showed championship pedigree, close out the Mavs in 5 games. What did you make of the series in general, even though we pretty much summed it up last time?
Going forward, the Mavs are going to be a major player in the playoffs. That's already set in stone.
That's growth. The
thing is, even though Luka started off, I think Luka got frustrated early because of how well the defense played, the Warriors played. And the one thing was that stood out for me was Steph wasn't even going off, but the rest of the team was like picking up the slack. Klay was popping shots, and he was like fading off on a three. Like, and he felt like the ball didn't even lack. I can't even explain the jump shot, to be honest. But, you know, that's how well the Warriors played to close them out at home, right? But on the Mavericks side, I just think Luka needs, even though Luka, you know, there is a production in this game. And then the day somebody has to still put up the 45, 10, and 12 with that usage rate. And he's doing it. And you have to give a man his credit where he's doing it. The thing is, his game just has to be much more, there has to be much more of an off-ball game. He has to be able to play a two-way game better, a much more two-way game, where, you know, because there were so many plays where, because he wasn't getting what he needed to get on offense, he wasn't going back on defense. And in my opinion, I've always said this. When I know personally on the court that I'm not producing on offense, I'm always going to, you know, bust double my... double down on defense. Because if I can't get a bucket on you, you're not going to get a bucket on me. And that should be his mentality, you know, right, going forward. And I think that would play a major role in the Mavs making that next step, yeah. Right? Because if you look at Jason Tatum, right, you've seen games in the playoffs where he's not as efficient, but his team is winning. Why? Because they're doubling down on defense, right? And his team is where they are now because of, you know, little intangibles like that. So I was going to say Luka needs to just emulate stuff like that.
Yeah, and I feel like the first step to doing that is coming into the season in shape. Like, Luka is 6'8", Tatum is 6'9". Like, I don't expect him to be physically present defensively as Jason Tatum is, but just be present. Like, Steph is 6'3". But, like, you know, obviously, if you're bigger than Steph, you can take advantage of that. But it's not just like a walk in the park. He's going to, you know, actually drag his shorts up and play defense. Yeah. Like, Luka needs to do that. Like, I get it, you're putting up 35, you're putting up 8 rebounds, you're putting up 12 assists. But like Femi said, if your shot is not going, like your shot is not going to go all the time. But then when you double down on defense, I like that. If I can't get a bucket on you, you can't get a bucket on me. And that's the mentality he needs to have. But to me, it all starts with coming in at the right shape. Like, you know, I know he's a generational talent. He's putting up these insane numbers. But then, you know, maybe coming into this season, if you could drop 5 10 pounds, all of a sudden he's that quicker. He can play defense better. He can move his feet quicker. It gives him a step on offense as well. It just comes with a lot of positives for not just him, but his team in general. And then I'm seeing a lot of talk about the Mavericks possibly trading for a second superstar. Don't trade for Rudy Gobert. It's just not worth it, I'll be honest with you. He's like Rudy, I respect him. He's a good defender, great defender, everything. But like pretty much he's in terms of offense, he would give you what Dwight Powell will give the Mavericks right now.
And look at him, he's a minus on offense, in my opinion.
Luka needs a legitimate second superstar for the Mavs to be able to take that next step, as well as him doubling down on defense. So I say, you know, respect to them for the season they've had. Nobody saw it coming at the start of the season. Nobody saw it coming at the start of the playoffs except my humble self and every other Mavericks fan in the world. We'll get that in there. But they've also, the front office has also shown you can trust them in like the trades for Spencer Dinwiddie and all that. So it's all about, you know.
Spencer was carrying too, that I forgot to even mention. Spencer was carrying. The man banked a corner three.
Yeah, it's all about taking that next step for them now. They have a superstar. They have a generational talent. Don't throw him away the way the Cavs did LeBron the first time. Get him some help, and you know, City of Dallas could be celebrating another title like they did in 2011. On the Warriors side of things, actually, Tosin, you go before I get to the Warriors.
That series was more the Warriors for me.
Yeah,
1,000. It was more Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr's defensive scheme against Dallas. The Dallas offense was amazing. Forcing Luka left, and then swiping when he goes left, and doubling him when he gets to like the when you go past the elbow, but not exactly in the paint, mm-hmm. almost by that baseline. Like, yeah, like doubling him there and forcing him to pass, making other guys have to like be
just don't let him go
efficient. Yeah, forcing other guys on Mavs to be efficient, and clearly. They are no superstars. They weren't efficient. They had one good game as a team.
Game of pride.
They had as well. Yeah. So, but moving forward, I think what they need is another superstar, because, like, over the decades, we've seen that a superstar can't be the one carrying the offense 100% of the time, and then still have the energy and defense. One thing mm-hmm. is going to have to give way. And Luka can do both. So I saw Luka play defense in the regular season. So I know he can play defense. He just needs to be able to pace himself and have like someone else that can carry the load, like a superstar that can also command double team. But yeah, that's what I think.
1,000%. I agree with every single thing you said. And I was going to get into it. Like I said it last week, the series showed me more about the Warriors than he did about like the Mavericks, because you can win 65 games in the regular season, you can sweep your opponents in the first round, but you know, it's not everyone in the league that knows what it's like to have been there and have done it, and especially been there and done it in terms of going to the finals 5 times in a row and winning 3 of those 5 championships. And the Warriors have definitely done that. And they showed that in the series, not just the series against the Mavericks, but also the series against the Grizzlies as well. You know, championship pedigree showed up, not just on the court, but in terms of adjustments made by the coach. A lot of people talk, Steve Kerr has been carried by the great players he's had. And obviously, coaching players like Steph and Clay makes it easier. But you still have to, you know, coach these guys. Like, you can't just hire a scrub and put him there. And he does a good effort of creating defensive schemes that really troubled Luka. I don't think he had any particularly efficient game in that series.
Yeah, because you have to remember that their best perimeter defender, a starter, was injured in the Memphis series, Gary Payton. Mm-hmm. And they were still able to like adjust to like play good defense. So like Steve Kerr, I can say enough about
1,000%.
For me, also is when the championship pedigree. Like, do you, for them to be that comfortable playing the Mavs when it was seesaw like that, especially after game three. You had
Draymond coming. It was game two for me, bro. It was game two for me with the 19-point lead. And I think Draymond got in foul trouble in that game as well.
Yeah, and taking the man still went on and recorded a podcast like an hour after the game. Like, that's how comfortable they've been playing this playoff. So it's almost like they've been there and done that. So there's that level of confidence where they're unshaken. So it's gonna be fireworks moving forward.
Yeah, and I was gonna make a point. So I honestly can't believe you guys haven't mentioned one of the greatest centers of all time in Kevon Chamberlain. He absolutely dominated the glass in that series. Not just in that series. The man had 11 offensive rebounds, 22 boards, and he closed out
game. Yeah, I saw that. So that's crazy.
He held his own against Luka. Unlike the Jazz series and the Sun series, where Ayton and Rudy Gobert were literally barbecue chicken for Luka, he held his own against Luka. Like, Luka is 6'9". Kevon Looney is 6'9". And I did not expect Kevon Looney to be able to.
Looney is 6'9"?
Yeah, he's 6'9". Exactly. Exactly.
11 offensive.
He plays like he's 7'5". To me, the ability to stay in front of Luka, you know, he earned himself some extra dollars in this postseason. I won't even lie to you. He especially in terms of rebounding, like, I don't know. A lot of times people forget how important rebounding is. Like, when you rebound as a defense, when you rebound, you are closing a defensive possession. That's effectively you saying, okay, I've gotten a stop. Time to go out there and increase my lead or take the lead or get back into the game. Do you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But then when you continue giving up second chance points, you know, it hurts not just you. It could hurt the crowd momentum. It could hurt your team's momentum as well, because you're like, we're getting stops, but then they're getting second possessions. And then all of a sudden, there's a Steph wide open at the corner from a Kevon Looney offensive rebound, splash. And all of a sudden, from a five-point game, you're down 12. And you have to shout out Kevon Looney, even though he doesn't make the shots. Grabbing those rebounds are very important. The thing I also wanted to ask about the Warriors is, do you see their championship window expiring in the next few years as Draymond, Klay, and Steph age, or do you see this dynasty going on for a long time? Because to me, I'll answer first. Like, to me, it all boils down to a player like Jonathan Kuminga and the development of James Wiseman. Like, Kawhi's development in terms of the San Antonio Spurs, where they were able to make him that defensive stopper he was in that 2014 finals, and also able to mold his offensive game, was what extended San Antonio's championship window. And to me, if he can do the exact same thing with Jonathan Kuminga, where he knows how to play defense, right? Came into the league as a defensive stopper, also knows how to put up bucket. They call him the bucket. They call him the come bucket for a reason. It's just...
Hey!
It's hey, zombie, bro. Yo. It's zombie. It's what they call him in the
league. That was nasty. That was nasty.
Hey, yo.
But yeah, I think his development is the next step in terms of extending the Warriors championship window with this core. And you also have other great players like I said, James Wiseman, Moses Moody, Jordan Poole. What do you guys think?
I think their window is 2 to 3 more years, right?
Even with this with the young players that they have?
Yeah, with their young core. Because here's the thing. As Reggie, you know how Reggie used to play off ball and everything?
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors have two of those kinds of players. And Reggie was still able to play 20 years. I don't know about Draymond, because Draymond does all the banging. He does the, you know, all the hard work and everything. So
I think Draymond is younger than Steph, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's what I'm not sure. Okay, so if that's... Then their window is still open a couple more years, because you still don't want to see them next year. If they lose this, you still don't want to see them next year, because they would have a... They could hide Steph on defense better. They could, now they have a larger size. And so, like you said, Kuminga, and I've seen a lot of potential in Kuminga. That boy slices. That boy be like me. Be electric sliding. I'm telling you, that boy be sliding. That boy be sliding for real. And he's quite athletic on offense. And they still have Wiggins. They still have James Wiseman that they could try and bring up the bench. And with that ball movement, Jordan Poole, Moody. Moody came into game five after not playing any game in the series and was knocking out shots like he was playing last game. You know what I'm saying? So that team, that Warriors team has a lot of potential. But, you know, I don't want to force Tosin into giving them credit. So I'll pass it right back to you so you can give it to him.
It must really hurt talking about the Warriors like this.
Oh, no, not at all. I give credit where it's due. I love Liverpool. I love Man City. So.
Yo. Hold that moment. Click, click.
Oh, stop. Yeah, but how long do you see their championship window being extended for?
I think, first off, when I look at the team runs well around Steph. Mm-hmm. If Steph is not who Steph is, the team is not who they are. So how long do I see Steph playing how he's playing? I don't know. But what I know is Jordan Poole is a replica of Steph. Steph in his younger days. Now, Jordan Poole has a ways to go to like develop and whatnot. But if Jordan Poole can develop that potential, then they just need and the coach is still who the coach is, then I see the dynasty going on for a longer period of time. So I think the key for me is Jordan Poole and his development into embracing that Steph Curry type of play.
Yeah, but one thing's for sure, the Warriors are a dynasty. I think that's six finals in 8 years. They've made six and six finals where the core three were completely healthy. And I want you to think about like what the Warriors have been through. In 2018-19, they lose to our Raptors in a thrilling NBA finals in six games. Then they come back the next year, win only 15 games because Klay is out the whole year with an ACL injury. Steph breaks his hand, doesn't even get to play in the bubble. The Warriors don't even show up in the bubble, right? So that's then the next
season. No, wait. Steph couldn't get to play in the bubble because LeBron took him out, not because of his hand.
No. That was last year.
Yeah.
The bubble was 2020.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then last year, they're playing against both the Lakers and the Memphis Grizzlies. And Steph comes after failing to make the playoffs and losing to a young Memphis Grizzlies side. And he says, one thing's for sure, you don't want to see us next year. And what do? They coast to the NBA Finals. That's a dynasty right there. Six straight finals with Steph, Clay, and Dre healthy. What more do you have to say about that?
No, most definitely. Just them winning three championships is already a dynasty, 1,000%. But, go ahead. I do have, things that I want to talk about. But, yeah.
In terms of what? Go on, say it. The floor is yours.
What do you think about the Western Conference Final MVP that Steph got, and how do you think that would impact his personal legacy, and
my opinion doesn't mean anything. I think the only thing left for Steph is to potentially overtake Magic Johnson. There's nothing he can do right now that'll hurt his legacy. He doesn't need anything to stamp his legacy. He doesn't need anything for his legacy. His legacy, he'll be forever be remembered as the player who changed the game of basketball and the greatest shooter God has ever created. So all these arguments to Steph need a finals MVP, he doesn't need anything. He doesn't need anything. Now he might want those things to, you know, because he wants to be remembered as the greatest point guard of all time. Everybody wants to be remembered as the greatest point guard of all time. So, you know, possibly to elevate him above a Magic Johnson, you know, he might need that finals MVP. But in terms of his legacy, he doesn't need anything. Nothing he does right now can tarnish his legacy. Steph can lose every single NBA final to the end of his career. cannot be you.
No. When I say legacy, I was gonna say like top 15 players in history of the game. Like
he's potentially a top 15 player right now. Though.
Basically,
he's potentially a top 15 player right now. Think about it in the how many year history of the NBA. He's the only unanimous MVP.
Also, yeah, but what I mean is, so if he wins, like, let's say 3 Western Conference MVP, right? Do you think that would bolster his resume where he is now? Not just a top 15 player, and he would be like a top 10 player. Like, would he move up the ranks?
Basically? Are we putting into Western Conference MVP?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Because Lord knows how many Eastern Conference MVPs LeBron James would have won. I mean, the man has been to 10 finals. So if we're saying anything, he potentially has 10 Eastern Conference MVPs or 9, because one of them was in the West. Do you know what I'm saying? No.
But, yes. No, he went to 10. He went to 10 straight.
Eight straight.
Yeah, and he's made 10 finals. 8 straight. Yeah.
9 finals. 9-1, he was in the West.
His 10th one was in the West.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, LeBron could potentially have 9 conference finals MVP. So I don't know how much stock we're putting into that because, you know, there's a lot of greats out there with 0, you know, conference finals MVPs. So I think the main thing that's missing for Steph right now, he could have gone without winning that conference final MVP. And, you know, if he won finals MVP, everything would have been rosy for him. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just for me, the only person Steph has to overtake now is Magic, and all he needs is a couple, 1 or 2 final MVPs, and that's a discussion.
Femi, what do you think about like the idea of like the introduction of Western Conference MVP and final Eastern
too
Conference?
Late. Too late.
Too late. Too late.
Too late.
I'd like because 10, 20 years too late.
Like too late. I wish it was something around MJ's time. Because we all know who would have won it.
Right.
So
but my question is, what is the purpose actually?
I don't see it.
I kind of see it, though.
I think it's probably to recognize, you know, it's not easy to make it out the East. And a lot of times, if you make it out to your conference and you lose in the finals, you know, players, let's say now, like Jimmy in 2020 bubble, he didn't get any recognition. He would have won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP if it was around in that time. But he put on the, you know, masterpiece in the Conference Finals and the NBA Finals, but he lost and he didn't get any recognition. But then, you know, I think it's just something they created to give players recognition in case, you know, because it's not easy making it in the NBA Finals.
True. And they gave the names to the legends of the game. The legends of the East and the West.
And the West.
Yeah. Easily that award could have easily gone to could have been a LeBron James conference finals thing. Like it's LeBron's name that's on it because of how many times he's made it out. You feel me? But they wanted to make it like the legends themselves, where you have the Magic and Bird. You know what I'm saying? So I get it, but
I think it's a good addition, but I think it's going to take 10 years before we actually start putting stock into conference finals MVPs.
Yeah. Right. Me, I feel is a useless addition. I think in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, I don't care about it. Simply because the guys currently in top 20 don't have any conference MVP. So if you're going
to
be talking about
to take 10
in 20 years,
take stock.
No, but if you're talking about 10 years from now, what type of stock would it take if the guys you're comparing greatness with don't have anything like that or didn't have any opposite type?
I understand where you're coming from, but it could potentially be used as a debate for like modern day players. Like, oh, LaMelo Ball is not better than Luka. You know, LaMelo has this, Luka has this. Like, obviously, there'll always be that disparity in terms of the greats like Michael Jeffrey Jordan, potentially LeBron James, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. None of these guys have conference finals MVPs. But down the line, it will start to pick up relevance. Like, I don't think there was any DPOY in Kareem's days. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure about that, but there was no DPOY in Kareem's day. So, but now the award holds relevance because a lot of people have won it. So down the line, you know, the more prestigious it becomes, in my opinion.
So,
if you
win conference MVP and you don't win the finals, you remember over the years, people have always said, I mean, Jordan is Jordan because he went 6 out of 6. LeBron has it not because he has not won it so certain number of times and he has choked so certain number of times. Now, if you're going to say in 10 years, there's going to be stock put in conference MVP, and let's say, for example, you're losing the finals, that why would I hold anyone serious? The only thing that should be held serious is the finals MVP. And if you win the championship, making the finals is like, why would I start to take that serious 10 years from now? When the reason we hold people to a certain level like Jordan is because they went 6 out of 6.
I mean, I respect that. Like, you're not going to
put acknowledge that.
Yeah, you're not going to put
like a participation trophy.
Yeah, you're not going to put someone in the greatest of all time arguments based on conference finals MVPs, right? The finals MVPs will always hold more weight. But in my opinion, it's just a way of recognizing the effort that these players put in to make the NBA finals. Like, I don't see anything wrong with it. Like, you know, Jimmy, the Heat win yesterday, Jimmy Butler is conference finals MVP. You can't, that's something you recognize. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I think like Femi says, participation trophy. And people that reach finals, when you lose in the finals, they should just give you like a participation trophy. Is the same insult.
I don't think it's as bad as you guys are making it out to be. It will never carry as much weight as finals.
It won't come close to finals.
It won't even come close, yes. But I just think, you know, sometimes it can be used as an argument for a bonus in terms of like now conference finals.
Please don't bring that argument to me, Shai, because
you know how the players used all NBA first team to wager more money in terms of the Supermax. You can use, or if you win conference finals MVP, you can earn more.
Okay,
money.
So then we should, when we are talking about greatest, we should be talking about who went to the finals the most.
My bad. You can't use that argument because you're a LeBron fan, but you know.
Okay. Very good.
Like I said, the Warriors show championship pedigree. Steph Curry, first ever winner of the Magic Johnson Western Conference Finals MVP.
Please, we are not recognizing that.
Even though Tosin doesn't recognize it. And the Warriors are in their 6th final in 8 years. Enough has been said about them. Let's hop on the Jets and ride to the East, where the Boston South Celtics Beach. Are going back to the NBA Finals for the first time in what, 12 years? Is it 12 years? 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years.
Yeah. What did you guys make of game 6 and 7?
6 and 7. 6 was a masterpiece by Jimmy Butler. Playing into game 6 was a virtuoso by Jimmy Butler. He balled his heart out. Tough shot after tough shot, bucket after bucket.
And one after and one.
Like tough layups after tough layups. I'm like, bro.
That man get is this, driving man. Pump fake, bro. Pump fake.
Oh my god!
Way, like, bro.
That felt like that Loki had the essence of Game 6 Bron against Boston.
It was Game 6 Bron against Boston, and he ended up putting up more points than Bron put up in that game.
That's true. Like, yeah, it carried the same essence. But in Game 7, I don't think he should have gone for the 3-2.
I knew we were going to have this argument. I knew it. Immediately he pulled that and missed it. I knew we're having this argument today.
Because here's the thing with me. Here's the thing. If he made that, I'd have lost it. You know what I'm saying? I would have
not
been
only
like,
you. Way to go. Miami, he will have lost it. The Boston Celtics.
Way to go, Jimmy. Way to go, Jimmy. But if you look at, when I look at the play, there was nobody protecting him. and it was Al Horford on.
You want to disrespect Al?
I'm not gonna disrespect Al, but with the way the game was going, I think Jimmy would have put in the foul. I love the foul.
You know that, all that.
Let's put things into also, context. I understand
into context. Jimmy goes up for 47 points in game six. Like you said, that was a virtuoso. If there's any other word in the English dictionary that you can use to describe incredible, stellar, wonderful, anything positive in the dictionary, you can throw it at that performance. Because what he did, I never thought Jimmy would be able to beat that performance, that 40-point triple-double he had against the Lakers in the bubble. And then he goes and does that. Four 40-point games in the playoffs this year. Averaged 32 against the Miami Heat. Averaged 28 against the Philadelphia 76ers and averaged 25 against the Boston Celtics. Game seven, he's the only reason that the Miami Heat were still in that game, let's be honest. I think the man had 35 points. He's the only reason they're still in that game. And the Heat did a bad... One thing about Jimmy that's so underrated about him, he's automatic from the free throw line. When you send him there, you might as well count yourself losing 2 points because he's going to make his free throws. He will always make his free throws. But him pulling up in transition, that man played every single minute of that ball game yesterday. Every single minute. And he had just made one exact same stepping three in transition to give him his 24th point towards the end of the first half. And I think he cut the lead down to six. So I have no problem with him taking that three. If he makes that three, the Celtics are dead. Like, I don't think they have a chance of winning that game. Because they were struggling to execute offensively. So, I have no problem with him taking that three, to be honest with you. You make some, you miss some. It's a make or miss league. And unfortunately for him, despite all his performances he's had in the playoffs, he's going to have to live with the fact that he missed that shot. But in terms of whether he should regret taking the shot, no. I 1,000% agree with his decision to take the shot. Now, you might say it's a better shot if he puts his head down, drives the rim up against Al Horford, he could potentially get a three-point play because that had been the way the game had been going. And I understand that. But even if they tie the game and he goes overtime, the Celtics are going to win. The Celtics are 1,000%. Miami had missed nine straight field goals before, you know, the Strus put back and Lowry made a layup to cut it down to seven. Or was it five? But yeah. But they had missed nine straight field goals. I think they were going to struggle to execute offensively if the game goes to overtime. So I have no problem with Jimmy taking that shot, to be honest with you. Tosin, what do you think?
First of all, I don't want to like until after the action has been taken. So I just want to judge based off of like the context of what happened, not the results of him missing the shot. Yeah. I think it was a good shot. First of all, how many superstars down two with a few seconds left being open on the three-point line? How many superstars wouldn't take it? You're the superstar of the team. You want to like make
you have
the
every shot right to take that shot.
Yeah. And nobody can be mad at that. Two, he had the hot hand. This guy was the one keeping them in the game. Brought them back. They were down. End of first half, they should have been down by like maybe 20, but this guy kept them afloat. So you live by your superstar, you die by him. The smarter thing would have been to go to the hoop, like you said, try to get fouled, or even you might collapse the defense to like kick out. So many things, so many ifs that you can mention about any play in the NBA in history. But your superstar being open on the three-point line, taking the shot, I do not have a problem with that.
I'm not saying I do have a problem with that. I'm just saying the better shot would have been to drive to the rim.
No, 1,000%.
And I feel like on the shot itself, Jimmy rushed the release. Like, I've watched it back over and over again, and I've seen Jimmy shoot. Jimmy did not even flick his wrist to hold the follow through. He just put it up there. And I was like, you rushed that shot, my boy. Take your time. Be like Kawhi.
I'm tired, man.
45 minutes.
I don't know if this was at the back of Jimmy's mind, But in when you look back to game seven, Philly Toronto, he made the two to tie the game, but he still got his ass sent home by Kawhi.
That's crazy.
He did the right thing there. He put his head down, drove to the rim. Tough finish over Serge Ibaka.
Tough finish. Over well, Serge, too.
He still got his
ass sent home. Like a good Serge.
He still got his ass sent home. You know, it could, I'm not saying it was at the back of his mind, but it could potentially be. He's like, nah, if they're winning this, I'm putting us up in this situation. Driving. Our Horford is backing
up. Wait, but the Toronto one, was he after like a timeout? Was he a play call?
No, it was in transition. I think so. I don't know if, no, it was in transition. Kawhi had just missed a free throw. And
And then Jimmy rebounded. No, I think Embiid rebounded.
Embiid rebounded and kicked it to Jimmy. And then Jimmy just pushed. In transition, used his body to create separation off Serge. Tough layup, but
tough layup. You know, could have caught a 9-1 on that, to be honest. I'm surprised.
But anybody should have no problem with Jimmy taking that shot. Like,
I don't have a problem. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying. I feel like here's my thing. I would have trusted Jimmy more if he had just gone into that his feet to the right mid-range jump shot than him stepping into a three.
And if he missed,
Femi, how many other superstars would take?
I know Bro would pull that shot.
Everybody
is pulling it from half court, man. Don't even.
I know Bro is going to pull that shot. I know
to win the game in the historic manner, like everybody said.
I think they were on an 11-0 run or something of that sort. Like the
Celtics. Yeah.
Jimmy just
talk serious himself. Though.
Jimmy earned himself. Like I tweeted this after the game. There's no way in hell that series should be going seven games. It's just the resilience of the Miami Heat and their leader in Jimmy Butler. Like, the honest truth is the Celtics are just better. The Celtics are bigger. The Celtics are quicker. The Celtics are more talented.
But
Miami showed resilience. They showed fight. And like, I know a lot of people say the Heat culture thing is cliche, but it's true. You can't argue with facts. It's true. Although, I don't know if you guys saw the clip of Udonis Haslem walking back to the locker room. Like, my man had put up 40 and just lost.
Yeah, I was crying.
But the Heat culture thing is true. Like, if I'm a Miami Heat player, I hold my head high. Like, except Victor Oladipo, because I don't know what he was thinking when he pulled that three from.
No, Oladipo, it was very big on defense. Seven.
Lowry had a good game seven. In my opinion,
but I don't understand this flopping around is between us all,
bro. But I mean, it gets things done. You got.
I do want to say Jimmy showed me something. Like, usually after the bubble that Jimmy balled out, and when I look at Jimmy's like numbers, I always thought maybe it was just a one-off thing, 1 year type of thing, but I can't slander Jimmy anymore. Jimmy can drop 12 points per game regular season. Well, I think I'm starting to come to terms with the fact that when he comes to like the playoffs, he's going to.
I see him as a less talented version of Kawhi Leonard. Like, he doesn't have Kawhi's. But like the regular season, Kawhi. Yeah. I don't think Kawhi averaged up to 25 a game last year.
I think like Jimmy and Kawhi, they take regular season as like the first couple of weeks of high school. And then once it's like.
Yeah, and they're like, wake me up when it's time for the real thing.
Yeah.
And you see them, your eyes bright. And that's Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Jimmy earned himself huge respect in this playoffs. Huge respect.
Wait, as Miami Heat organization, what would you guys do for next season? Would you keep it the same way?
I was going to ask that question because
Jimmy's getting older.
No, you need Jimmy. I think Jimmy can do this for another year. At least another year. Jimmy can do it. He could potentially go 2 years, but I can see him being for another year. If I'm the Miami Heat, first of all, if I'm Spo, today, I take Bam into my office and I'm like, listen, next season, you're taking 20 shots every game. Every game, you're taking 20 shots.
When he's aggressive, good things happen.
Exactly. put your head down. You know, you're big, you're strong. Minky's of your size, and then work on your mid-range game. His mid-range was going yesterday. That's why he kept the Miami Heat in the game at some point as well. Him and Jimmy, I think Bam had 23 and 11. Jimmy had 35. So, you know, whenever Bam is aggressive, good things happen for Miami. So if I'm Spoh, I come to my office, I'm like, listen, you're not here for a dribble hand. You're not a dribble handoff merchant, right? Yeah, I know Duncan Robinson got 90 million, but you got the max contract. Put your head down and be aggressive. You can be Jimmy's second option. And then I was thinking, should they try get a Jordan Clarkson? But they do have Tyler Hero off the bench. And, you know, when you losing Tyler Hero is losing 21%, 21 points a game and 40% from behind the arc. Like, that's a huge loss. That's a huge loss for them.
That is a huge loss.
So, I mean, I think you can keep the core for one more year, see how it goes. I also found it oddly strange that Tuck, when he played 17 minutes yesterday, I didn't know what that was about. Because he's done the best job in terms of guarding Jason Tatum in this series.
Maybe he's dealing with something.
So, what do you think, Femi? Do you think the Heat need to do anything? And then, sorry to cut you short, but like, last thing is, if Oladipo resigns with the Heat, and he takes that step to getting back to where he was, that could be another, you know,
that could be another accent.
That could, because I saw him in some games. It looked like he had that step back. So, Coach, what do you think?
Well, I just think, to be honest, Bam. For me, the thing is, we know that we need Jimmy fresh enough. Like, we need Jimmy fresh for the team. They need him later in the games and stuff like that. So earlier, like the way the Lakers did Bron and AD, he'd have something like that with Bam and Jimmy. You don't want Bam and Jimmy operating in the mid-range, setting a pick and roll with a Bam cutting to the basket and you have Tyler Hero on the other baseline, which is an easy dump off of you if they collapse the defense, right? So when you have that going, I would like for Spoh to have, you know, Bam aggressive in the first half. If you've noticed, the first year of AD's stint with the Lakers, first half, it was almost like the man was, I could remember the games could go so long in the first half because of how many free throws AD was trying to make or trying to take because of how aggressive they tried to make him to be in the first half. So I think Bam needs to work on that. Bam needs to step up his mid-range game so that when Lowry or Hero hits that dump-off pass, just like AD, you can operate in the mid-range and just pop it, make it. You feel me? So I just feel like that needs to get going for the Heat, right? I feel like they have the right pieces. It's just it was an unfortunate year this year. They missed that six man off the bench. And I would just say with Jim, they might need maybe a 1-2 piece. I just want to see. I would want them to run it back for the first couple of games, see what they're missing.
Yeah, definitely.
And then make a decision from there.
I agree with that.
But for now, let Bam needs to be like aggressive that first half, keeping Jimmy fresh for the second.
Justin, before I get to you, I also want to say something. Kyle Lowry, bro. The Celtics are guarding you with disrespect. When you come off that pick and roll, Al Horford is in the drop coverage. It's not every time you look for a bounce pass to Bam. Pull it. Like, he made a lot of big threes. And it happened in the first five games of the series. Like, they're back. Al Horford is backing off of you. Pull it. I don't think he played game one. I think he came back for game two.
Two.
Yeah, but like, if they're backing off of you, pull it. Pull the shot.
Remember what I told you last week? When they're daring you to take the shot, that's exactly when you should take the shot.
Take that shot. I'm not saying you should take that shot when you're like a center who has no three-point ability. You're Kyle Lowry, though. I've seen you go for 20 points in the first half of game six in the closeout final NBA game. Take that shot consistently. You're getting paid $19 million. He made a couple of big shots in that same play. So I don't know why he always hesitates to take it. But, Tosin, let me get to you. What do you think? Do you think the Heat need anything?
I mean, consistently, we've always said their problem is half-court offense. So if I'm the organization, I'm looking to improve that. And I think the most important thing is the ball handler. Like, Jimmy should not be the one handling the ball 100% of the time, especially the type of effort he puts on the defensive side. When you have a 90 million bomb in Kyle Lowry,
that doesn't deserve
that contract. Kyle Lowry deserved it in Toronto because he balled out in Toronto. But you have to accept people for who they are in the moment and not just holding on to the past. Lowry can have a couple of good games, drop 12 points, and that is good game, 15 points. But on a constant basis, giving you solid 7. And I don't think that's good enough to carry anyone to the finals. So I honestly was very like disappointed watching Kyle Lowry. Like I actually preferred when they played like Max Strus or something, because those guys weren't afraid to take the three when they were open. And you know, that can disrupt the defense a little bit. But Lowry was more, they could telegraph the play a little bit more. With Lowry, and it was predictable. So either Lowry gets better, in which I don't think he can, but if they can, the organization can get him to and be more aggressive, because you have to think again, he's also injury prone. So
I think he needs to get in the weight room, lose 5 to 8 pounds.
Yeah. How reliable can he be to be there in the postseason? We don't know. So like, we don't want to keep having the same excuse every postseason. Oh, Lowry was injured this year. Lowry was injured this year. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. And if he can lose some of the ass fat as well, that would be great, because it's too much back there.
You're
but,
wild.
Yeah.
Hey.
You're wild.
Hey, yo.
You're wild.
Why are you talking about this? I'm right on the bottom. Hey, yo.
But yeah, I also wanted to say, why do I keep forgetting what I want to? I need to start writing things down. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I have another problem with the Miami Heat before we get into the Boston Celtics is the fact that their biggest 3-point threats have no handle. Duncan Robinson and Max Strus can't put the ball on the floor. So you're having to run DHOs, dribble floppies and all that for all of them. And a team as defensively good as the Boston Celtics, when you can play chest to chest with Max Strus, even if it's a Derrick White, who is obviously smaller than him, you're going to disrupt Miami's offense in terms of the three ball. So, you could potentially, not saying you can get him, but like a player like a Desmond Bane would do the Miami Heat a world of good.
Yeah. Someone that can also like collapse the defense. Like their ball handlers, they don't collapse the defense. They just try and run things around the perimeter. Yeah, outside Tyler Hero. And when it's not been a great game, it's not great.
And so you might also have to find a way to get rid of that $90 million Robinson contract as well, because it's not looking like it's.
He doesn't play defense, and when you have someone like that, not even your rotation for the most part in players, you have to find a way
for some reason. Three is not even as Duncan in the bubble, bro. You can't give him two.
But you have to understand that his confidence is not there anymore because he's not playing. It was a starter and whatnot, and he's not getting tired minutes.
Great season from the Miami Heat, and then let's talk about the Boston Celtics. I'm not surprised, to be honest. I didn't pick the Celtics to make the NBA Finals at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the playoffs. But when I found out Chris Middleton was injured, I just knew they were going to go all the way to the finals. They're such a talented team. And for a talented team, they can be very stupid at times, because like we saw in the last few minutes of that game, they just were not executing offensively. But at the end of the day, they still got it done. Al Horford gives his all for this team in every single minute he plays. Jason Tatum wasn't particularly great yesterday. Twice he annoyed me because he was complaining about not getting foul calls and didn't get up on defense. And all of a sudden, a 12-point lead is a 7-point lead. By the end of the day, they got it done. They're in the NBA Finals for the first time with this core. So what do you guys make of the Celtics and their performance in this postseason so far?
Honestly, I mean, when we look back, beginning of the season, midway through the season, I did not expect anything from this team. The fact that they brought in a new coach, first year, I did not expect much from this team. But they've been amazing. Me personally, they've probably played the most lockdown defense that I've seen in like 5 to 10 years. Because even when I look back,
Raptors, at, respect us.
Like, I don't understand.
When I look back at Golden State, like golden era against Cavs, and they were the best defensive team in the league, it was still more team defense. But these Boston Celtics, like every single player can hold their own.
Peyton Pritchard is the only problem that they have defensively.
They're all so good. And when you have Marcus Smart being the defensive player of the year, but it's still arguable that he's the best defender on the team, because you have Williams, you have the two Williams that could get a shout. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown played like, nah, it's amazing.
You have Robert Williams blocking 3-point shots from the lane. Explain it to me, please.
It's incredible. So I'm very happy for them. They turned their season around after Marcus Smart came out to the media and said what he said about players being selfish and whatnot. They've I saw you play against Miami where Tatum pulled up for the three and just passed it to Smart in the lane. I'm like, nah, this is different. This is different. So I don't even know what's missing with this Boston Celtics team. Nothing seems to be missing. They're just a complete team from top to bottom.
And I also think that the reason why it doesn't seem like nothing is missing is because their star players in Tatum and Brown are starting to make the right decisions. Like you said, he's pulling up for a contested three, and he sees Marcus Smart wide open in the lane, and he kicks it to him. Tatum shoots that ball in previous
years. Yeah.
Certain times you see Jaylen Brown driving baseline, and he's looking to finish instead of just bounce, giving a bounce pass to the wide open player in the corner. So I think the one thing that the Celtics did that improved their chances in terms of making them a championship level team was Tatum and Brown recognizing when to make the right play. Like, Tatum got doubled a lot in this series. A lot of times, especially in the fourth quarter of yesterday's game, he saw the double coming early and he made the right pass. Now, sometimes the shot will go in, sometimes the shot won't go in, but he did make the right pass, and that's what elevated them to this level. And like Femi said, when you're not getting buckets, you're not getting buckets on me. And that's what Tatum did yesterday. He wasn't entirely efficient, but he played defense. Jaylen Brown always plays defense. He's one of the most underappreciated players in the NBA. He's so talented, and I know sometimes he can be frustrating to watch him, because when he turns the ball over, you're thinking like, JB, what are you doing? But he's so talented, so underappreciated. And I'm just looking at the Celtics team. You imagine asking for a switch, and you switch out from Marcus Smart to Jaylen Brown to Jason Tatum to Grant Williams to Al Horford to Robert Williams and Derrick White as well. You have to shout him out. He was big in game 6 and he hit some big shots yesterday as well. Like, that's defense, right?
The last thing I wanted to say is I wanted to give a huge shout out to what's the name of their previous coach?
Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens, who is their president of basketball operations now. The signing of Al Horford back, and even wasn't about that white guy,
Derrick White,
their center. No, the white Daniel center Fires, from, Daniel that Fires. Got back from Chicago. Ties and also Derrick White. Those additions are very, very key to this organization, and I wanted to give a shout out to that guy.
Derrick White. He's having his Fred VanVleet moment, bro. The man, his wife gave birth to Hendrix. That's his son's name, by the way, Hendrix.
That's crazy.
Can I be the godfather?
I knew Femi was going to love that.
That's crazy.
His son's name is Hendrix, and the man
White.
I just turned into...
What a player! Oh, God.
Gave birth to Hendrix, and he's turned into... Prime Stephen Curry, pulling up from 3. The man had 22 points in game 6. Kept the Celtics in that game. He plays defense. Derrick White is one of those guys. Him and Al Horford, they're those guys who do the things that don't show up in the stat sheets, but translate to wins. And I know sometimes it's cliche to say, but when you actually watch these games, you're like, oh, like, you know, Derrick White, you know, just it might be the decision to make a bounce pass instead of throwing a lob pass, and it leads to an and one, something like that. And the decision, like you said, to bring Al Horford back, I thought they were bringing him back so that they can clear his contract and create up cap space so they can sign someone else. But decision to keep him in the NBA Finals. The man had played 140 games in playoffs and had not made an NBA Final. So you can see how the whole Celtics locker room were happy for him. Marcus Smart, everybody had a problem with Smart's game yesterday, but I thought he was amazing. Like, he took shots when he needed to take them. Like, as Jalen Rose said, Smart was didn't fail to realize it was wide open for a reason. But Marcus Smart was wide open because when Jason Tatum sees the double coming, he sees he gives the pass to the right person, swing, Smart is wide open. He just failed to knock down the three. I've seen him knock down big shots for the Celtics this year, and he's always going to show up on the defensive end. So I respect Marcus Smart. Like I said, Jalen Brown deserves more respect. Robert Williams, I would say for as long as this show goes on, he blocked a three-point shot from the lane. Like, a corner three-point shot from the lane. I don't understand how he did that, but he just they just have so many great.
His name is Time Lord for a reason.
Facts. So many great defensive players, and they're a matchup nightmare for any single team in the NBA. And I'm happy for Deuce Tatum as well. His first NBA Finals.
you know RDC's video about dick riding.
Nah, it's going to be Deuce versus Cannon Curry. I cannot wait to see that. But yeah, big up the Boston Celtics winning the Eastern Conference, winning the East and going to the NBA Finals. Jason Tatum winning the inaugural Larry Bird Conference Final MVP trophy. And now the preview of the NBA Finals. Who do you guys have
winning? One sec. I was just going to say, with the, when you said about, like, I guess making the right play, we can all just look back to game one of these playoffs against the Brooklyn Nets. They get the rebound, and it was JB actually. The man, I thought JB was going to attack the rim first, but when he pushed the pace, you, like you said, make the extra pass down to the baseline. He kicked it right back out to the wing. Watching them before, my first thought was Marcus is going to pull that shot.
Yep, 1,000%.
He pumped fake, two defenders blow by. Tatum is right there. Tatum could have stood there for the wide open jumper, knowing that KD's head is turned around. But instead, he makes the cut as a superstar. And they find him, boom, they win the game.
And you know, Tatum said he was going for the rebound as well because he thought Smart was going to pull it.
So, now you can just see from each of their best players of the core, right, making the right decision, especially when there was a lot of pressure, especially when you don't even have, you have to think about, you have to make something out of nothing. You know, they did that. And now they're where they are because of stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? The only thing is the Warriors have been there and done that. As we previewed the NBA Finals, the Warriors have been there and done that. But they're a force to behold.
So offense and defense. Who do you have winning the NBA Finals?
I just want a good NBA Finals, to be honest with you.
I want a 7-game series. I'm dying for a 7-game series.
Same here.
I want all 7 games to be close. None of this blowout nonsense.
I want to see Boston win Game 5 and then see Game 6 clear.
That's gonna be on the road. OKC fans are trembling.
Or I want to see Warriors up 3-2, and I want to see whether Game 6 clays for real, as they try to close them out.
Or if Game 6 Jason Tatum might be a thing. Who knows?
Who knows? So, but it's going to be fireworks.
I'll be honest with you. Right from the moment the final buzzer sounded yesterday, I have been struggling because I want to say that pick. I think, you know, the Celtics are so talented, so big, so long, so athletic, so quick. They're a matchup nightmare for any team in the NBA, especially defensively. But then again, I look on the other side and I see Steph, Clay, and Dre, and I'm like, these guys play without pressure in the NBA Finals. It's almost like it's another playoff game for them. And this mean I just don't know. I just don't know. This is how I've been.
Why? Like I said, I don't have a pick. I don't have a pick. I just want to watch.
I just want a 7-game series, man.
For real.
Tosin, I'm expecting you to have a pick.
Yes, please.
Of course. Like Stephen A. Smith would always say, we're in the media. This is entertainment. You have to have a pick. You can't sit on the fence. Me, it's always been easy for me. I always have a pick. But let me break it down before I give you my pick. Golden State. They're amazing. They have people that will make your defense need to play a different way. Whatever Miami has played, Milwaukee has played, is a whole new scheme you need against Golden State. Do they have the players to like run around all these players?
Yeah, but they're very switch heavy offense. So
yes, they are, but that defense can create a mismatch. But you have what's his name? Curry, Thompson, and Poole runners. On Boston, you have Smart, who would run?
He's a runner. With you. He's a track star.
You have Smart, who would run with you? But I don't see Jason Tatum running around. He's going to tire out.
I think it's going to be a very switch heavy offense, like defense.
If you're switching, that means you're probably going to have someone that is not as quick laterally to defend, like a Steph Curry.
I can see the Celtics for a lot of possessions running that five of Smart, Tatum, Brown, Grant Williams, and Al Horford, as opposed to Robert Williams.
So let's say Golden State, they play without Looney. So that means Grant Williams is a liability, because if they're playing small ball, Grant Williams is not going to be laterally quick enough to defend any of them.
What?
Who's he going to defend? Grant Williams can take Wiggins.
Bro, that man Grant Williams was locking up Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I'm talking about Horford. Who is Horford defending?
Horford can beat Yari. He can defend Draymond Green.
Yeah, but they're a switch heavy defense, right?
You're not bringing up Al Horford to be part of the perimeter defense, right? He's majorly going to be on the interior, right? Al Horford is not going to be out on the perimeter guarding Draymond Green.
You know the handoff between Draymond Green and maybe Steph Curry or Poole or Thompson. Now, when he hands off, he gives constant illegal screens. So the person that is guarding those guys cannot reach them in time. So usually, the person that is guarding Draymond would have to front to just try and
put the hand off.
So the person recovers. Now, if you have Horford doing that, because you can't have Horford sagging off, that means Steph is going to be open after the handoff. He has to like put his hand up there, which Steph can actually force the switch. Because if Steph like drives a little bit and then goes back out, he has to force the switch, right?
Celtics.
What
I would say is the Celtics are one of the greatest defensive teams I've laid my eyes on. This is the best defensive team I've watched.
1,000%. How many teams has the Celtics played
I want you to think about how the Raptors played the Warriors in 2019. You can't see the Celtics running that same thing. The Raptors had a Marc Gasol.
Bro,
Raptors
respectfully played a very injured Golden State team. Kevin Durant.
Yes, that's what. But they don't have a KD right now.
But they have a Jordan Poole. They didn't have a Jordan Poole then.
Jordan Poole is not KD.
What? Jordan Poole is like a Steph Curry.
But he's still at like X. But I would give the Warriors this, yeah? In 2019, right, they didn't have a bench like the way these Warriors do.
Yeah, they have Otto Porter off the bench. They have
They didn't have a Wiggins. They didn't have a GP. They didn't have a Poole. They didn't have, you know, like the bench they had at that time was Quinn Cook, Jerebko.
Nick Young was there.
Nick Young. Like, come on. No, Nick Young wasn't even playing. I think it was just that. That's the players I can remember off the top of my head.
Boogie was off the bench as well.
Boogie was off
the bench. The point is, what Jordan Poole is doing is Steph Curry-esque. And if you don't guard Jordan Poole with the same respect of Steph Curry, he's going to make the shots.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Yeah, then you haven't been watching.
The defense. I trust the defensive scheme of the Boston Celtics. So
I say all this to say that on the defensive side, that small ball, Boston will be able to hurt Golden State as well.
Heavily.
Rebounding, bullying. Because if Horford is on the court, that means Horford is taking three, and Draymond can't just always do that help defense and just leave Horford. He has to actually stay by Horford. All of them can shoot a three on Boston. So I think it's going to be balanced on both ends. And I do expect a blowout in any situation. Because even when Boston go through...
Do that for 24 hours and you reach where I am right now. This is exactly what I'm needing for 24 hours.
No. What? I have my peak. Just let me get there. Boston can go through spells of actually not scoring anything.
Yeah,
but what they do is they make up for it on the defensive side, exactly. And they can draw the fouls like a lot.
And they're
not going to be out rebounded. So I have Boston winning in seven.
No! The tossing kiss of death strikes again.
Wait. First of all, did you think I would ever say Golden State winning?
I mean, you can try and trick the universe and say Golden State, so your kiss of death can.
No, but he was not trying. I don't think he's trying to put that out there on the pod. No.
Not even in my privacy would I ever mention Golden State winning. I also think that this is the best matchup for against Golden 100%. State. These guys are long and they are mobile, like 100%. and they can shoot. So I definitely think Boston and seven.
What's going to be key for Golden State is keeping Draymond out of foul trouble
and technicals.
Yeah,
I also think Klay is going to be very key in this series. Like,
absolutely,
oh, yeah.
He needs to stop one of them too.
What Femi said about Game 6, Klay. I hope Warriors are like down 3-2. And they need Game 6 Klay. And Game 6 Klay should come out full force and for them to still lose.
Yo, this is a hater, man.
Game 6 Klay should go
full
out.
This is
and lose by easy. And lose by one.
Yo, stop, man.
You are evil.
Even the Egyptians didn't hit on the Israelites like this, man.
Man, oh, man.
Bro, you need to calm down, bro. You need to stop, man.
See, the man needs to come out in full fledged, full blood.
That's
dressed with his thick headband.
So you have the Celtics in seven. So you trust the Celtics to close out the Golden State Warriors in their home.
I first of all don't think Boston can lose two games in a row. They would always have a bounce back. So it would take for them to lose game six for them to win game seven. But if they win game six, then I probably have going to say winning game seven. So I hope they lose game six. But however it needs to go, they need to lose game six.
Yo, I have the Celtics. I have the worry. I don't know, man. I can't pick.
This is how girls are when you guys are talking to them. I cannot pick.
No. Pick my thing. I can't pick, bro. Like, this is such a crazy matchup. Like, I feel like I need to watch game one, but at the end of the day, game one is not enough because Ime is going to make adjustments. Or Steve,
don't take the easy way out. Pick something.
I am a coward. I'm not picking.
I'm not happy. You've never been a coward, never in your life.
Oh my God. You know what? Screw it. I have the Raptors with
you. Femi, you also need to pick.
I have the Raptors with you.
Okay, let me ask you a question. If you were a player of Boston and you were facing Golden State, who do you think would actually win?
I'll be confident in our chances.
Okay, so if you were a player on Golden State, you would also pick the Golden State.
Hey man, we've been here, we've done that.
I have Stephen Clay.
Come on, this is
I'll make sure I call
this is
I don't think you understand. Like, have I ever shied away from picking a winner? This is crazy.
No, that's why I'm confused.
Like, I can't even pick. I'm telling you, I can't pick.
You know,
they match up so well.
You know,
they match up.
You
so
know,
well.
You wait. Do you guys know it's okay to be wrong?
You know, for some reason, I have been right from the moment the Celtics won. Like right from the moment I realized that Chris Middleton was not fit, for some reason I've just felt that the Celtics are going to win the chip.
Me, it was as soon as they beat Milwaukee, because I had Milwaukee winning the chip. So if Milwaukee loses to Boston, I have Boston winning the entire thing, and I've had them since then. And coincidentally, everybody that Brooklyn loses to wins the chip since last year. I mean, it's a one-time thing, but we'll say always.
I mean, I think I do think the Celtics, the Warriors do have the best player on the court.
You go for Warriors.
Yeah.
Oh, my
goodness. The Warriors have the best player on the court, but the Celtics might have the better team.
Am I the only one who has hatred for Warriors?
No, I think the Celtics win. I think the Celtics win in six.
Tosin, here's the thing. I used to hate the Warriors, right? But then I started watching their game for what it was, and I was like, holy cow, this team is crazy.
I mean, you love Man City, you love Liverpool, you can love the world.
You can love the world?
No. You see, that's
I
where,
thought you were a boy.
That's where I stopped my movements. I know I've been moving mad, but that's where I stopped.
Me, but I think the Celtics will win in six or seven games.
Six or... Wait, if you can say six, why were you confused?
What do you mean?
If you can say Boston can win it in six, why were you confused on who to pick?
Because the Celtics can, the Warriors can win in six as well, easily. The Warriors can easily win in six games. That's why I'm confused. Like, I don't know. It's difficult to pick, but I'm going to stick with the Celtics because I've been picking them for a while and they haven't let me down. So I'll stick with the Celtics.
Just so that, I can have someone to fight against. I'm going Warriors till I die.
Do you want to put dew on that? Do you want to put some dew on that?
Yes. I put my dew where my mouth is.
Okay. How many dews? Five cases.
Yeah, bet.
Five cases. Oh, you guys are
bet.
Listeners, you're hearing five cases.
No, me. I'm not betting dew because I can't be drinking like sugar like that. I want five shawarmas large.
Look at this tea.
Let's say five shawarmas. Large.
You almost said large. Large.
Large.
Yo,
I'm done.
Yeah, so I have the Celtics in six or seven. Tosin has the Celtics in six or seven.
No, not six or seven. I have them in seven. Just seven.
Okay. And Femi has the Warriors.
In what? Warriors in what?
In seven. Six or seven, actually.
I want a seven-game series, to be honest with you. Okay. I want to see them try and kill each other in every single game.
Let's predict finals MVP.
Tatum.
Curry.
Tatum.
Curry.
And let me tell you something. If Golden State wins, Steph is not even the
finals MVP. He's about to say it's Clay because of the story.
No, not the story. I think it's either going to be Clay or... Yeah, just Clay, actually. There's no or.
Your
it's
hatred
Clay.
For Steph transcends anything else.
No. I actually love Steph.
But you guys get mad at me when I talk about number 77.
No. I love Steph.
That Tosin ridiculed his brother for using Steph's free throw routine, even though it works.
No, I love Steph. Don't get it wrong. I love Steph.
Okay, so before we close, let's get into our biggest winner and loser of the week. Femi, who's your biggest winner of the week?
Biggest winner of the week is Klay Thompson.
Anytime you want to say Klay, just say Tyson, Jackson, Jordan, Game 6.
Game 6, for real. It's Klay Thompson. After all, it's been through 2 years of those injuries. I'm telling you, I've had something similar in terms of an ACL injury, and it's not fun.
I think after they won game five, he said it was around this time last year he had just started jogging again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not, he has been through hell, man. It's not easy.
No, you got to give it to him. It doesn't matter how much money you make. The injury is what it was. And, you know, it brings a man down. And to see him back in the finals, hey. And it wasn't like he didn't go off in that game, closeout game. He was going off.
8 of 16 threes. Making one
going, three. And then he said, you know, he said he could have made 10.
He should have made 10. He left two on the short rim. And so if you're Clay, you've been to six straight NBA finals, to be fair. So that's
you can put yourself in the company as Jordan and them too at LeBron because you've been there. Yeah.
Tosin, who's your biggest winner?
My biggest winner is Jason Tatum. Simply because my guy texted Kobe Bryant before the game. I said, I got you today.
And I can't believe I missed this, but like two shots Jason Tatum made were reminiscent of Kobe. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a time, I think it was a pretty close game. 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Marcus Smart driving to the rim, kicks out to Jason Tatum. One dribble sidestep pull up, and he knocks it down to put the Celtics up 7. And then Miami is going on the run. And, you know, Kyle Lowry knocks the ball out of someone's hands. And they lob it to Tatum. And he did the same thing against the Celtics where mainly they lobbed it to him out of bounds. He just faded to his right and knocked it down. So when he got the ball, he stepped like he was fading right and then took one dribble and faded left and he was wide open, knocked it down. You know, just the recognition, the time and the recognition of the time on the clock and the speed to unleash that shot, you know, that was 24 on his armband. So, and to me, he's been the biggest winner of this playoffs because now he's knocked off everyone's best player in the world in KD and Giannis. Mm-hmm. And he's knocked off the number one seed Miami Heat, including playoff Jimmy going off the way he was going off. So he's definitely the biggest winner in this playoffs for me. But for me, my biggest winner yesterday was Al Horford, or this week was Al Horford, because that man has played 140 NBA playoff games, zero trips to the finals. More enough game six, yeah, I just lost his granddad.
Damn, so I didn't even know that.
That's crazy.
And it's not like he was on the bench. He contributed, playing heavy minutes, playing defense, blocking shots, grabbing boards. He had his own explosive game in, I think it was game 4 against Milwaukee, where he dunked on Giannis and had 30 points. So he's my biggest
winner. Ever since he made that face of,
I got you. Say no.
Ever since he made that face, the Celtics have been unstoppable. So you got to give him credit.
Yeah.
So biggest loser of the week. Don't you dare say the Lakers.
How did you read my mind? How did you read my mind?
They hired Darvin Ham. At least give the man a chance, please.
Fine. Biggest loser has to be Kyrie.
Has to be. That has to be his worst killing me right now.
Why? Please.
Oh no, man. He's losing me every day. That's my favorite player. What's he doing?
What did he do this week?
Who's your biggest loser, please?
My biggest loser is DJ Khaled.
Hey, you want to come back to me? Get out of here.
What are you guys talking about? Please.
I'm dead ass. I've been thinking about it all week. Seeing that guy massaging the coach, just jumping all over. This guy was waving their banner with them.
At the beginning of the game.
Yeah, like, I was all that. Just take a nail. So, yeah.
Mine is Udonis Haslem, man. That guy was... He was talking. He was like,
yo, Draymond, thank you.
Thank you.
Bro, the way he walked up to the announcer's table, you would think my man just dropped a 70-point triple double. And then when they lose the game, he's walking back to the locker room, head held down. He was like this. He said he couldn't sleep after Draymond made the statement. I'm like, bro, what? You're not even playing. What do you mean you can't sleep? It's gotta be. I love you, D, man. I love you, D, but it is definitely.
Oh my goodness. I understand the passion for the game, but like, bro, relax.
Relax for real, man. Yeah, but we've come to the end of another episode of the Quadcast. Thank you for coming back, Tosin and Femi. Thank you for your takes, as always. And thank you, listeners, for listening to another episode of the Quadcast. Make sure to check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and all podcast streaming platforms. Tell a friend to listen to the Quadcast. It's a Slam Time production. Bye.